Let's hit the road. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and we begin our day with a trip to the shoreline of our Great Lakes in Wisconsin. And where should we go? Up Lake Michigan? Across Superior? And what will we find? We've got the expert, but even she would be interested in your suggestions this morning. So join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Beth Gauper. She's the editor of the travel site MidwestWeekends.com. And Beth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Lee. It's always a pleasure.
And we're in the dog days of summer now. New York Times reported yesterday most of Wisconsin's heat index was in the extreme caution range. And when you get these hot days like these and you don't have anything planned and you've got a sweaty family, I'd be interested to know from you, Beth, where could families take their kids to beat the heat?
Well, the obvious answer to that would be a Great Lake. I happen to live in Duluth on Lake Superior, which never gets very much warmer than 40 degrees. So it's pretty easy to cool off. In fact, Lake Superior is even too cold usually. So I often go to a river and sit in one of the pools created by the water rushing downward to Lake Superior. In Wisconsin, you've got Bayfield, you've got Lake Michigan, you've got all the beaches in Michigan. So many choices.
In fact, you recently took your family to the Bay Beach Amusement Park in Green Bay. What's your review?
Oh, that is such a fun place. I wish it were closer. With kids, there's nowhere better, really. The rides cost 50 cents, a dollar. It's a bargain. Green Bay is a fun little town, and of course, it's on a Great Lake.
Sure thing. So can you make a day of it with your family?
Well, it depends on where you live. My kids loved the circle tour of Lake Michigan, and that maybe it's counterintuitive, but kids love a road trip like that because you've got a beach almost every, well, Lake Michigan is almost all beaches, and then Lake Superior, there's a beach every few miles. So not only can you swim, but you can jump on rocks, you can throw rocks into the lake. I do Green Bay on a stop on the circle tour.
Okay. That Lake Michigan Circle Tour, it is a scenic highway that spans about 1,100 miles and loops across the entire Great Lake. And apart from Green Bay, where were some of the other hot spots on that Lake Michigan Circle Tour that you'd point us to, Beth?
Oh, my goodness. You know, one of the big issues is reservations. Both Circle Tours, you have to plan way in advance. Michigan has an amazing selection of state park rustic cabins, lodges, but they have to be reserved in advance. And the same thing with camping. It's 100% reservable, unfortunately, in those beach parks. So I would probably go up to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. There's always camping in the national forests and a lot of sites. For example, on the Lake Michigan side, you have Fayette Historical Town Site, which is a ghost town, but the buildings are very well preserved because it's a park, and Kitchy Itty Kippy Spring.
I'm sorry, what?
it's in the same area, not too far from the Fayette Peninsula. It's called Kitchy Itty Kippy Spring, and it's just like Florida when you have springs coming up from the middle of the earth.
Oh, wow.
And it's a pond, and there is a self-propelled with ropes raft that will take you right over the spring bubbling up from the earth, and it's very blue and very beautiful. So a little offbeat attractions like that on the circle tour, and then, of course, you have Mackinac Island, you have Traverse City. Those are big resort towns. You need to plan in advance for those. But for last-minute travel, you can't beat the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Mm. I am glad you brought this up, Beth. We're talking with local travel editor of MidwestWeekends.com, Beth Gauper, as we travel across our Great Lakes shorelines 800 miles throughout the state of Wisconsin and find the hot spots as we try to keep cool. And we'll take your suggestions at 1-800-642-1234. And while we were talking about this and our morning show team meeting yesterday, Beth, the one thing that kept coming up was everything's booked up. Everything gets booked up so early. Everything's booked up so often. As the editor of MidwestWeekends.com, have you found a way to navigate through some of the tough bookings through the summer season, Beth?
Well, there's always cancellations.
What's the best way to catch those?
Times, probably one of the silver linings of COVID is people get sick at the last minute and there are cancellations. You just have to call. You have to check online. I know Minnesota State Parks now has a notification you can sign up for last-minute camping cancellations. But then again, you know, if you have a tent, you can go to those national forests in Wisconsin, Shawamigan, Nicolet National Forest. The UP has Ottawa and Hiawatha National Forest. You can almost always get a campsite in a national forest. So that's probably what I do.
And Beth, when you're talking about hitting the road, you're also talking about budgeting when you go, especially when you're taking the whole family in tow. So
right.
How do you begin to even budget for a weekend trip with the kids?
Well, you know, one nice thing about food trucks, for example, is, you just don't sit down in a restaurant, probably. Just grab something from the street if you can get a Hero, or you can get a stand. Go to a little roasted chicken ice cream stand that you still find sometimes in Wisconsin. And, oh, boy, the first time I went on the Upper Peninsula, I was so excited because they still had those old-fashioned mom-and-pop ice cream stands. And you can stop for a pasty. So if you eat a pasty, you really don't need to eat the rest of the day. And they only cost about $7. So give your kids one of those.
Now, I saw on your blog at MidwestWeekends.com, your family just had its first pasty recently on a recent road trip around Lake Michigan.
It's
so tell us a little bit about
pasty. Tell us a little bit
about this delight.
Well, those are what the miners used to eat in the mines, and they have a couple of advantages. One, it's usually ground beef, potatoes, and carrots, maybe parsnip, wrapped in a thick pastry crust, so it's not going to break, and it fills you up. So are still sold in Michigan.
Like the original Hot Pockets.
Exactly.
Except
bigger. They're not always that flavorful, so you usually eat them with a gravy or ketchup in a, you know, if you grab one.
What was the what was your kids' review of the pasties?
You know, they'd probably rather have something else, but you know, it's a great backpacker food.
Oh, sure. And as you mentioned, it'll keep you full all day long.
It will keep you full, yeah.
Our guest is Beth Gopper, editor of the travel site MidwestWeekends.com, where you can keep up with her family's travels and find the hot spots. But we're hitting them with you this morning with your help at 1-800-642-1234 with 800 miles of shorelines of Lakes Michigan and Superior across Wisconsin. Where would you go to stay cool as we heat up through July and August? What would you recommend? And if there is a hidden gem that you'd like just a few of us to know about, well, then join us and let us know. 1-800-642-1234 or email us for the conversation ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue with Beth Gopper. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Summer vacation on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're keeping cool by taking you to some of Wisconsin's best hot spots this morning along the shorelines of Lakes Michigan and Superior, where the water may always be too cold to swim, but it'll keep you cool. If you're plugging our destination into your GPS this morning, where would you take us along the shores of the Great Lakes? Join in 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Beth Gopper is our guest, editor of the travel site MidwestWeekends.com. We've been talking about the pasties on the Lake Michigan Circle Tour, Beth, but are there some other food intricacies, delicacies that you would find along the Great Lakes that we should not miss?
Well, Racine, of course, has the Kringle.
Of course.
And if you can make it as far as Thunder Bay.
Oh, Ontario.
Ontario, if you're on the Circle Tour, they have a filled donut called a Persian. and you have to pick those up. They have a pink frosting. People pick them up by the box and take them home. If they get stale, they toast them. And there, you can also buy pierogies. I personally love pierogies. Those are like Ukrainian and Polish filled dumplings. And if you live in southern Wisconsin and you love pierogies, you can go to Pierogi Fest in the Chicago suburb of Whiting, Indiana. Wow. I've never been, but I've always wanted to go.
And there are a slew of beaches and state parks along the coast of Lake Michigan. When I was growing up, it was the Colerandre State Park and some of the sand dunes out on Lake Michigan there. But you recently visited Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore, and that's over in Michigan as well. What are the dunes like there, Beth?
One of them is very difficult to get back up, and people keep running down it, and even when they're warned that it's hard to get back up the dune climb. They're nice, and kids love them. My kids love sand. They love water. They love rocks. None of those things cost money. It's right. The best cheap trip, really, to travel along the lakes. One thing I want to mention about Sleeping Bear is they have two areas where lakes, inland lakes, are separated from the big lake by little bars. So you can go from a relative warmth of the little lake into Lake Michigan.
Oh.
So if you have little kids, actually little kids don't mind cold water, but it's the adults who do.
So, go running away from it.
You have the best of both worlds there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And speaking of cold water, back to Lake Superior for the moment. It's largest freshwater lake in the world, at least by surface area. Take that, Russia. But where should travelers go to see what Lake Superior has to offer? What are the hot spots there, Beth?
Well, people in Wisconsin are closest to Bayfield.
Yeah.
And Bayfield is a very fun town. You can take the ferry over to Madeline Island. You can camp in Big Bay Town Park. The beaches on Madeline Island are fabulous. Take that, Cape Cod. And the water is very cool. Probably only about now is it going to be bearable. But in August, late August, early September, it's really nice. Mm. So, and then older people might want to go kayaking in the Apostles. Yeah, lots of fun. And then, of course, there's Door County. Probably most Wisconsinites are already familiar with that, but lots of town beaches there, too.
Yeah, we're talking about local travel with Beth Gopper this morning and taking us along the 800 miles of shoreline of Lakes Michigan and Superior through Wisconsin with the editor of MidwestWeekends.com. And your input along the way. If you've got a suggestion for a hidden gem, we'd love to hear it this morning before we're done at 1-800-642-1234. And something off maybe the beaten path, something that may not be a big star on anybody's map, but something you may want, would recommend that we check out, Beth. What's one of the things you found along the Great Lakes that maybe could be missed but shouldn't?
Well, the most remote area would be the Keweenaw Peninsula the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. And my favorite place is the east side of the peninsula. And it takes a long time to get there from wherever you are, really. When you're in Detroit, you're closer to Washington, D.C., than the Keweenaw Peninsula. I love Oliver Bay. The bays on the east side of the Keweenaw Peninsula are underlaid by a red, cream, and pink sandstone. And it's so soft that when you rub it with your toe, it swirls away into the water.
Oh.
And it's just lovely. And the thimbleberries will be ripening shortly. And you can collect as many as you want because they're everywhere. I love the Keweenaw.
Are you able to recruit your kids into berry picking in the UP?
Yes.
A little bit?
Especially because right at the end of July and early August, the bears also come to eat them. So
I'm sorry?
You may encounter the bears.
All right. Part of your summer experience?
Yeah, well, that's going to thrill the kids, of course.
Yes, it would.
You will be there picking blueberries and thimbleberries along with, as this happened to us, there was a bear cub there, too. Well, I don't know where the mama was. You always have to worry about
that. Yeah, yeah.
We didn't see the mama, only the cute little bear cub.
You slowly back away from the berries and...
If you see that mama coming, slowly back away.
Let's get your suggestions this morning with our guest, Beth Gopper, editor of MidwestWeekends.com. You can join 1-800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org before we're done. Lauren and Beloit, good morning. You're on The Morning Show with Beth Gopper.
Good morning. Hopefully you can hear me and there's no echo. I'll turn,
I can hear you.
Three suggestions. One, you mentioned Thunder Bay. The Thunder Bay area is absolutely amazing. Little tiny towns, lots of craggy rock parks. Not sure if they're state. It's been a while since I've been there. Excellent camping in Kakabeka Falls. Just a really, really neat area to explore, and it would be incredibly family-oriented. Second suggestion, Point Beach State Park. I absolutely love this little gem. Great beach, snack house right on the beach. Awesome bike trails / walking trails. Great car camping. And then the last one is it's part of Sheridan Park in Milwaukee, which is in the Cudahy Oak Creek area, right off of Layton Avenue. And a very quiet little city park or county park. But if you can find, there's a driveway, if you can find that driveway and follow it down, it will take you right to Lake Michigan. There's a nice little beach there, usually not a whole lot of people down there. And there's some little cliffs for kids to climb, and it is just a great little spot.
Hey, what was the name of the falls in Thunder Bay? I wanted to make sure we got that.
Chakabeka Falls.
Chakabeka Falls.
Yep, it's a state park there. There is a fall, a really pretty falls there. Like I said, the Thunder, I'm trying to remember where we hit. Terry Fox was the runner that did that.
The one-legged runner across Canada. Yeah, I remember.
Yep, and his monument. There's a memorial for him. And somehow I'm one of these people that explores, you know, everywhere, back roads, et cetera. Somehow we ended up on this really weird rock formation up at the top with this view. I wouldn't recommend it if you don't have a four-wheel drive.
Okay.
but it was amazing, and there were these little tiny towns, townships, almost like a fishing area. It was a very cool place to explore. And, of course, if you need supplies or whatever, Thunder Bay is there.
So, Lauren, thank you so much for those suggestions, and I'll be looking for that driveway in Cudahy to find Sheridan Park to take me to Lake Michigan. I love that. And then Point Beach State Park, just near Two Rivers there. Beth, what did you hear from Lauren? Places that you recognize?
Oh, those were fantastic recommendations. Thunder Bay is a great destination. And, you know, the Canadian dollar is worth 78 cents. So good time to go to Canada.
You want to talk about a budget, Thunder Bay.
Yes, yeah. And visit Fort William while you're there. It's the world's largest reenacted, restored fur trade post in the world. So you have reenactors wandering around. Great, great for kids.
Got a couple minutes left, but I want to make sure we get as many recommendations in as possible. So let's go to Mona Quick in Madison. Mona, good morning. You're on with Beth Gopper.
I got three quick ones. The Ogallala Canyon Railway, I don't know if it still goes, but that's an awesome trip. And you can also go, you can also go through the locks at Sault Ste. Marie, which is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And in Duluth Superior, there's the Railway Museum, which is really awesome.
So the locks in Sault Ste. Marie, the Railway Museum in Duluth, and the Ogallala Canyon Railway Trail. Is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Beth, have you heard of those? I would imagine right in your backyard there.
Yes, that's wonderful. Duluth Depot is very popular. Thomas Tank Engine comes for two weekends in August. That's very popular.
Yeah, for the kids.
Yeah, and Agawa Canyon, that train trip is very popular in the fall. That's when people like to go because of all the colors that you go through.
Mona, thank you so much for the call. And the one thing we should not let pass is the people that you meet along the Great Lakes. And one of the great things and experiences for me, whether it be the UP or Thunder Bay or any place across the state of Wisconsin, some of the people you meet along the way, Beth Gopper, certainly makes it worth the trip every time.
Yes, it does. Nicest people in the world.
Even if the pasties are a little strange at first, the people are wonderful.
Beth, they really are.
Thank you so much for taking us on our summer vacation this morning. Very much enjoyed your conversation.
Thank you, Lee.
Beth,
have a great summer.
You as well. Beth Gopper, and thanks for the help. Editor of the travel site MidwestWeekends.com. Hey, listen, ahead this hour, we're going to explore supply chain challenges from the perspective of a chief executive officer here in Wisconsin as the morning show continues its series with local CEOs. I invite you to join in the conversation at 1-800-642-1234 at any point. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Kate Archer-Kent this morning, news is next, along with a story from Our Wisconsin Life here on the Ideas Network. Morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and Rod Rushing, the CEO of Reb Group, joins us momentarily. But first, let's take time for Wisconsin Life this morning. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about welcoming pests.
Ever feel like you're constantly battling garden invaders? Dealing with the weeds, bugs, and critters can be a never-ending, daunting task. Or you can roll with it, just like author BJ Hollers and his family.
My neighbors did the logical thing. Rolled out the chicken wire, planted the stakes, and transformed their garden into a fortress. Sun and rain still had access, though no longer the rabbits or the raccoons or the deer. Much of the garden's beauty was gone, but the crop remained. Sprigs of parsley, carrot greens, summer squash. It was a price my neighbors were willing to pay. Meanwhile, our garden was quite the opposite. Unencumbered, free, and for every critter with whom we shared our neighborhood, a smorgasbord of earthly delights. My wife and I attempted our own deterrent, recruiting a plastic owl who served admirably for all of an hour, at which point the rabbits grew wise to our dead-eyed sentinel, viewing him more as a maitre d' than our tactical defense force. One morning in late May, in the days prior to the invasion, my 5-year-old son stood beside me in the yard and said, rather unceremoniously, "Oh look, a deer." I turned to spot a fawn half hidden in clover, his snout bobbing like a dousing rod. He lay folded atop a bed of needles, staring at my son as my son stared back. Two creatures too young to be afraid. In retrospect, I should have been the one to be afraid. I now see that fawn for what he was, the opening salvo of the onslaught soon to come, whose presence became so routine that some nights we all dined al fresco. My young family hunched in their lawn chairs, popsicles dangling, while the rabbits and squirrels made short work of everything edible. It was easier to marvel than be mad, and so we did. By mid-July, it was clear we had a problem. Not with the pests, but with our neighbors. While they worked hard to keep the animals away, we worked hard to recruit them. Had we been cable TV subscribers, we might have filled our time otherwise. But since we weren't, we took our front row seats in the lawn chairs, reveling in the animals' displays. Equally curious, the animals watched us too, shooting us looks which, roughly translated, meant, "Have you people never heard of chicken wire?" 6 months later, long after the garden was gone and our plastic owl was neck deep in snow, I peeked out the back window to spot 3 deer nosing through the hoarfrost. They were more apparition than animal, more guest than pest. I like to think they were a family, and that perhaps the littler one was the one we'd met in the clover the previous spring. That morning, when the deer returned, the world was so cold it could snap. So cold, I swear I saw a shimmer of heat rising from their fur. Long after they'd left me, their hoofprints held firm in the snow. A reminder, not of what we'd lost, but of all we'd been given.
BJ Hollers is a writer and assistant professor at University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every single Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Thank you, Maureen.
I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network, where we've regularly been meeting with some of Wisconsin's chief executive officers to find out what they see from the top and how they factor the countless variables that go into the executive decisions that reverberate throughout our economy. This morning, our guest is Rod Rushing. Rod Rushing is the president and CEO of Rev Group, a designer and manufacturer of specialty vehicles. It's headquartered in Brookfield with 21 manufacturing facilities. And before joining the company in March 2020, Rushing spent 30 years at Johnson Controls. Rod, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Lee, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Rev Group and what your company does.
Yeah, just as the description provided there, you know, we're a specialty manufacturer of vehicles of many, many different ranges and types. The company IPO'd in 2017, coming out of a private equity consolidation. So we've been traded on the New York Stock Exchange since January 2017 in providing vehicles to our communities. And it's really a really important service we provide, especially in a time like we've just gone through with the COVID situation. We provide ambulances, we provide fire trucks, these things that really help first responders take care of the people in our communities, amongst many other vehicles like school buses and recreation vehicles as well. So we're in there every day serving our public and trying to do good.
And yet, Rod, you spent 30 years at Johnson Controls, and just as I just wondering what it's like to make that leap. The last several years, as I understand it, you oversaw the company's global manufacturing of building technologies. I'd imagine that leap had to be a little bit of a scary one. Just tell me personally what went into making that jump to Rev Group.
Well, the last role, just a slight correction, I was responsible for our North American business, our field organization, but over 30 years, you know, it was just a wonderful experience. I'll start with that. Yeah. I mean, it was, they gave me great opportunities and afforded me an opportunity to move around the country, to move to Asia and get just really rich experiences that not only helped me professionally, but also developed me as a person. So I'm very, very thankful for my time there. But, you know, anytime you think about making a transition, there's a lot that goes into it. You think about, you know, where you're at in your career, what you might want to do as you're maybe thinking about approaching the end of your career. And the Rev opportunity came to me. I really wasn't seeking opportunity. And as I learned more about it and got to meet the board members, there was just the purpose of the company was great. The timing was great in terms of where they were at, what they were trying to accomplish. And I met with a few board members, and that dynamic worked out well. And it just ended up feeling right, and an opportunity to do something that was meaningful at maybe at the end of your career that you could maybe more directly give back and help something get done. So it was a positive opportunity. It was a situation that was brought to me, and it just worked out, to be honest with you, Liam.
Well, we crunched the numbers here, and since you're hiring, the Rev Group stock has rose 300%. What do you attribute that stock rise to? Is it Rod Rushing?
Well, I wouldn't. Not me. I think that there's a, you know, unfortunately, it was doing much better than that before this challenges we met in the market in the last year with what I'm sure we'll talk about, the supply chain challenge, but also just the pressures on the public market. So we hit a time, there was an opportunity for us to, coming out of COVID, demand was great. We were improving performance. And then we've subsequently, you know, some of these supply chain issues have hit us like they've hit almost all companies. And we're dealing through that and looking forward to a brighter day, as everyone is.
Let me invite listeners to our conversation. If you have a question for Rod Rushing, President and CEO of Rev Group, which is headquartered in the Milwaukee metro area, you're welcome to join us at any time at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. And our conversation, Rod, started with the emergency vehicles that Rev Group supplies and the conversation about the global supply chain and the struggles that companies like Rev Group have found with the stuttering of the global supply chain. What keeps Rod Rushing up at night as the chief executive officer of Rev Group? What keeps you from sleep?
Well, you know, there's a number of things. I mean, the first thing, when I came on board, Lee, in March of 2020, and that was right, as everyone knows, at the beginning of a really challenging time with the mm-hmm. with the COVID pandemic, and so immediately it went to the safety of our employees and how do we continue to provide vehicles for the people who are taking care of our citizens and our communities while making sure we do everything to protect our employees. And we managed through that as best we could and made sure we did the right things and followed, you know, the recommendations of the CDC and whatnot to make sure we were doing that. So that was kind of job number one, is how do we continue to perform but make sure we're doing that in the safest manner possible. And then we got onto a journey of really trying to transform the company. And that's a bit of a long story, but the part of my coming on board was we were in a bit of a challenging time operationally, and there was a vision we had to put together on how we're going to improve the performance of the company around some basic manufacturing fundamentals starting out with. And we got on that journey, we made good progress. And then, you know, what keeps me up now is some of the supply chain issues we have. And part of that's just the world as it is. As you can look at any the kind of the industrial manufacturers that are facing these supply chain issues, from very large companies like the automotive OEMs all the way down to smaller publicly traded companies like us, it's manifesting itself in not being able to get what you need to build what you have demand for. And that makes things more inefficient. It extends lead times. Then you lay on top of that some of the inflationary pressures that we've seen in the last year and a half. It makes a complicated environment to operate in. We've weathered it pretty well, I think, given where we were and our readiness to maybe manage challenges like these. It would have suggested it might be more difficult on us, but I think some of the things we got done early in the change have helped us. But no question, we have opportunity to perform and do better. But we're working it every day, and I've got a great team that's part of this that they've done everything we've asked them to, and continue to do everything they can to make sure our public's taken care of and getting the very best vehicles they can.
So. Well, as I understand it, Rev Group is part, has ownership in some 20 companies, that you are operating in some 16 states and have over 20 manufacturing facilities. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, it's ballpark. It's yeah. Close enough for the conversation. It was a consolidation of specialty vehicle companies by a private equity firm called American Industrial Partners that started back in 2006, 2008, right before the financial challenge we had back then. And they went on this process of bringing companies together that had a similar kind of business model of providing vehicles that were either built on chassis that were provided by companies like Ford and GM and Mercedes, or building them on chassis that they manufactured themselves. And with this thesis that there was an opportunity to create value through leveraging what these companies do together. And that's the mission once we went public that we've been on, is realizing that value.
Rod Rushing is president and CEO of Rev Group, headquartered in the Milwaukee metro area, and he is open to your questions this morning at 1-800-642-1234 about the global supply chain and the local impacts to our economy. And as well, you know, the emergency vehicles that communities rely on for emergency services. The domino effect of not having a supply chain that is delivering the goods you need to fill your orders, and what happens to your employees, again, across a handful of states all over the country, including right here in our backyard. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this is the Ideas Network. Thank you. So what can you do when the global supply chain fails to deliver the supplies you need to keep your business up and running and your employees paid? We're continuing our series with CEOs from across the state on The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and our guest is Rod Rushing, the president and CEO of Rev Group, headquartered in Brookfield, but operating manufacturing plants across the country, building buses, RVs, ambulances, fire trucks. And in the last year, Rev Group hasn't been able to get the chassis, radiators, or axles they need to meet their demand. What's a CEO to do then? Join in 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And Rod, as the Milwaukee Business Journal detailed, you've had to furlough 100 employees at plants throughout Rev Group as you have not been able to fill your supply chain. And what does a CEO do? How creative can you be in order to address these supply chain issues?
Well, there's a number of things that you do. I think the first thing is kind of set a context that when we came into this year, recognizing that things were difficult around the supply chain and getting materials so we could continue to build at the rate we had planned. And there was just an uncertainty whether that was going to correct or whether it was going to sustain. And so we made a decision last fall that we were going to maintain employment because almost everything we were building at that time, we had to touch twice. And what I mean by that is it goes down the line. If you don't have all the parts, you have to finish it at a later point. We call that out of sequence. So that requires you to dispatch laborers to go do that work. So you needed extra people to one, go finish the work that you couldn't finish on a first pass basis. But also, we were thinking that there was a chance that this might get reconciled and we might see improvement in the global supply chain. That never happened. It hasn't happened yet. And so this past spring, we made a decision that we made a very small trim because we have over 7,000 employees in North America, but we adjusted some labor because we knew that rate increase was not going to come back. And so we still needed people, obviously, to touch things twice, but we made a few small adjustments to our labor force to address some of the inefficiencies that we were having related to the supply chain. So that's kind of the labor piece of it. What we did more proactively is, and this really started back in the summer 2020 when I first joined, is we started building what I would call a more robust and resiliency and focus on our supply chain, which looks at multiple sources of supply for certain critical components and engineering details around making sure you got the documentation you need to go do that. So you try to build resilience in your supply chain so you're not single point dependent. Unfortunately, that journey was not complete by the time that some of the challenges that came upon the industrial companies broadly with the supply chain. So we had to weather through that. But right now it's a lot of working very closely with suppliers. We've put labor in some of our suppliers who have labor issues why they can't get us parts. We've helped them source globally with relationships we have abroad and Asian-based countries to help get parts and pieces that they may not be able to source locally. So we're trying to step down to tier two, tier three of our supply chain to help our tier one suppliers deliver components so we can then produce the products that we need to for our communities and our citizens.
Rod Rushing, a lot of talk about your supplies, but what about Rev Group's demand? How are sales now for your company's specialty vehicles?
Well, they're rather extraordinary. I mean, they're at a historical peak, and I think that just kind of mirrors what you've seen generally is there's more demand than can be supply, which is obviously leading to some of the inflationary issues that we're seeing. That our lead times now, in many cases, are double, if not more, than what our targeted lead times are, and it's all related to peak demand against troughing the ability to build. So you get this effect of prolonged lead times because you can't get the parts you need to build what you need to build, and you got more demand, so they kind of it expands on your lead times. So the demand is not an issue. I mean, we're in how you price to make sure you cover inflationary pressures is critical for the performance of industrial companies, and we're certainly working that. But there's no issues on demand. I think a lot of the spending in the vehicles that were created through the COVID relief worked its way down to communities, and that's made the budgets quite robust, and they're able to buy the vehicles that we produce. And so that's put some demand, pulled some demand forward, I believe, in our industry.
Rod Rushing, President and CEO of Rev Group, headquartered in Brookfield. And your questions before we're done with our time this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Are there public safety concerns with the backlog of ambulances and fire trucks? Are there concerns about adequate public safety coverage when you're talking about a backlog like this for emergency vehicles?
Well, I think if you think about, first and foremost, I think most of our communities are well equipped with the vehicles and capabilities they need to serve the public generally. But you know, it's hard to suggest how long this might go forward. At some point, there would be an issue. We certainly right now, I mean, when you're thinking about the communities that need their ambulances or need their fire trucks, and they're typically replacing something that's out of date, you can do things to extend the life and those things are still serviceable. But we're, the fact that we can't deliver on time has created some challenges for us. And a lot of that comes out of the inability for us on the ambulance side to get chassis to build on and the components that go into those after that. So yeah, I wouldn't say that we're at a tipping point around an issue for public safety, but it becomes, if this continues to be an issue over time, it's certainly going to be something that's going to be a problem for our local communities around serving their public, and then the public and the private sector that does the ambulance services for the communities as well.
Rod, we're seeing a more and more electric vehicles on the road, and as Rev Group is a manufacturer of specialty vehicles, what does the electric transportation future look like for your company?
Well, that's something we're across the board. You know, as a larger company in this space, we kind of feel a mandate that we should lead in this area as this technology works its way into our markets, and so. We've in almost all of our specialty vehicle categories, we have developed and we typically commercialize and do a develop based on an in-market demand for our customers. So we build it for that purpose. So we've got a large network of partners that we work with on the powertrain side of that. That's a battery electric vehicle side, and it differs by a product category depending on who you partner with. And then we've got the end markets we're serving. But there's certainly, it's becoming clearly that certain parts of that specialty vehicle market will evolve more quickly. Transit bus is one that's been evolving for some time into alternative fuels, and we're deep into that space, battery electric being one of them and not the only one. CNG and hydrogen-based fuels is another opportunity there. No. School buses is one that's moved rather quickly, but that's typically your larger school buses are converting at a faster pace than this type A, which is the smaller school buses, which is what we build in our business. And then fire trucks are probably, while we have an electric fire truck and we're very proud of it, and we launched it this year at the FDIC in Indianapolis, it's probably going to move more slowly just because of the loading and the applications that you see in terms of that and in that fire space. So we're in all the vehicle categories we're in, we're developing those capabilities to go EV, but it's going to evolve at a different pace depending on which market you're in.
Yeah, is there a time frame that we see? Because we've heard stories about 2040 all electric cars on the roads and stuff, and it does make you wonder about RVs, 18 wheelers, and emergency vehicles.
Yeah, I think that there's many views, as there always is. I think it's largely speculative. I think,
but it's something you got to continually watch, doesn't it?
It is, and the reality is that in this, from our perspective, the transition from internal combustion engine to an electric, an alternative fuel world, which we'll keep it at electric for this discussion, mm-hmm. is for what we do is something you have to have an engineered solution for. But we're an applier of technology; we're not like a core technology developer, right. So. Will benefit from the scale that the other industries create.
Rod, we are out of time, and I apologize because I have many more questions for you, but I appreciate you answering all of them this morning. Thank you, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
You bet. Rod Rushing, President and CEO of Rev Group, based in the Milwaukee metro area. Coming up next, the best TV has to offer. Is this the golden age of television? How would you know?